This is the State of Things broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. The diary of a 19th century white woman in Africa inspired Elaine Neal Orr's debut novel. It had already played a part in writing her memoir years earlier. Turns out that Lorana Bowen's 1853 diary was considered mandatory reading for early Baptist missionaries. That's why Elaine read it. She was born to a missionary family in Nigeria. She struggled with many of the same things Lorana wrote about. Elaine Neal Orr also saw a deeper story, one she felt would be best expressed through fiction. Elaine Neal Orr is a professor of English at North Carolina State University. Her new novel is A Different Sun, and she is with us today. Elaine, welcome. Good to have you here.
Thank you, Frank. It's wonderful to be here.
You identify yourself as a transatlantic writer. You grew up in Nigeria mostly, right? What was that like?
Growing up in Nigeria, yeah. It was perfectly wonderful and perfectly normal, right? Don't all white girls grow up in Nigeria? Mm-hmm. I was born there in 1954 in a town called Abomasha, which is where the novel is set, and primarily. And my first conscious entry to the U.S. was when I was six. So coming here was a revelation. Right.
And you would come back periodically
yes.
for a little time, right?
Yes, about every 4 years.
Of course, I say come back. It's not coming back for
that's
you. It's coming
right.
back for your
exactly.
parents.
Exactly. It was coming back for my parents, yeah. right? For me, it was going to this sort of white country, okay, where most of the people were white and the churches were white and the schools were white. This was before desegregation, okay? And I was always looking forward to going home, mm-hmm. which was going back to Nigeria.
You came here to live in when you were 16.
Yes.
What was that like for you?
Well, it was shocking, but I don't know that I knew how shocking, right? That was when I came with a one-way ticket, and I wasn't going home. And I'd known that I was coming for a while, but I don't think anything could prepare me for that. Huge a transformation in my life. And my parents were still in Nigeria. The Biafran War had just concluded. They were doing relief work. And as a girl, you know, what sort of claim did I have on my parents when they were doing relief work in Biafra?
Was it troubling for you? And in what ways? What did you find most difficult to adjust to here?
In the U.S.?
Yeah.
I found the customs of high school very peculiar. Getting in cars and driving around looking for boys. I think not having a kind of sense of extended family, which had been so profound on the mission. We lived on compounds and we had, you know, maybe 12 or 14 families. So it was like we were living in these extended communities, closely knit. And I was living among strangers, and their habits were strange.
So tell us about Lorana's diary, or Lorana's diary that you read. This is a white girl in Africa in 1853, or that's when her diary is written. Tell us about that diary and why you would read it.
Well, she's 21, so she's a young woman. And she's come from Georgia, the state of Georgia, with her husband, who's almost twice her age, a former Texas cavalryman. And she begins to write this diary. She takes this diary with her in a writing box. And it's where she begins to find some comfort. So maybe I should have had a diary when I came to the U.S. so I could have done that. But she also feels, as you can imagine, very much a stranger. She's the first white person in these communities that she's living in. So she's thought of as a great odd bird and even called a monster. People run from her. So she thought maybe they would find her beautiful, right, and welcome her because, after all, she's come here to do good. And so all of these adjustments that she's facing, she begins to record in the diary.
And this becomes sort of de rigueur. This is the mandatory reading for the children and wives of of missionaries.
Well, it wasn't really so much for me, but for my mother. Mm-hmm. I have the impression that this diary, a mimeographed copy of it, was given to young missionary wives when they arrived on the mission 100 years later to let them know that things had been much worse. And indeed, if they didn't have running water, they shouldn't complain, right? Because Lorana had had to tote her own, or she'd had to give very dearly out of her life for this mission. And so it was a bit of instruction.
How did this diary then, or did it immediately become the impetus for a novel for you?
Well, my mother gave me the copy when I was writing my memoir in the late 90s. And the thing is, I began to do a great deal of research for that memoir because I was looking for my historical and cultural ancestors. Those were the people who'd created the mission. So Lorana's diary, that was a key piece. And I think maybe my mother also wanted me to know a little more about her life, right? So I would see her in a different light as well, which was fair. And after I published the memoir, I continued to be mesmerized by this diary, not only for what it said, which was often quite poignant, phrases such as feelings deeply wounded, have been sad all day, and I'm thinking, well, now, who's with you? Who wounded you? But also for what wasn't in the diary, right? All the silences. I'm thinking she must have been censored by herself as to what she would write, and she might well have known that others would read it later, and guess what? It was circulated widely. So I wanted to give her all those things she couldn't write. And it had to be fiction in order to do that.
So tell us about your character, not Lorana Bowen, but in fact Emma Bowman.
Yes, Emma Bowman, I think, is probably part the historical character of Lorana, who kept the diary, and also my mother, with a few bits of myself, I'm sure. But Emma, based on the historical character, comes from a wealthy family in Georgia. Her father is a planter. He owns 40 slaves or more. And one old slave lives in the backyard. His name is Uncle Eli. And Emma begins to perceive pretty early in her life that something's wrong with this arrangement. And something very terrible happens with Uncle Eli that sears her brain and her consciousness and breaks her heart. And this is the beginning of her destiny.
But of course, it's the air she breathes, it's the water she's swimming in, and so it's difficult for her to figure out what this nagging sense of injustice
is.
Yes,
she just feels as though the world might break open, and she's afraid that it might break open. You know, if you're a girl and you're eight and something, you see a flaw in a parent, something happens, you don't really want to know what it is. And but for her, there came a day when she could no longer not know. Still, she's a product of her culture. Right. So when she goes to Africa and black men look her in the eye and don't back down, wow, she thought she was ready for Africa. But it turns out Africa's a little different from what she expected.
Sure. She goes on this, what she thinks is an exotic, righteous adventure, right? She's pious, she's religious, and she's going to bring the truth to these folk. With a kind of a swashbuckling a husband now.
Yes, very handsome.
Handsome, cavalry, perhaps a Texas Ranger, right? And so all the ladies in the church, and I love that section in the book where the ladies in the church are speculating about Henry and kind of wonder. And then she's brought face to face with the reality of what this is and what black people are in another place.
Yes, right? I mean, this is their country, right? This is before colonialism. The British aren't there, and they're on the coast, but they're not where she goes inland. And so they're in charge of everything. And she and her husband are not always well received. They have to get permission to enter a town. They have to get permission to leave a town. So it's quite an education for her. Henry's been there before, so he's a little advanced in his knowledge.
The beautiful thing, I think, about this book, and I'm talking about A Different Sun with author Elaine Neal Orr, is that beyond just the obvious clash of cultures and perhaps the destructive quality and the destructive nature of Western intervention and colonialism, there is this deeper understanding she comes to. Beyond the pious religiosity of her Baptist religion, she tumbles into a deep spiritual understanding.
Yes, well, there's a mystery at the heart of this novel. I can't say too much about it, except that you're touching on it, and it has to do with her discovery, both of how her past and her present are linked in ways that she had not suspected. She thought she was the link. There's a deeper link, and part of that link is a spiritual link, and part of what she's come for is to learn what she couldn't have learned at home. And yes, I treat her spirituality very seriously, and I want it to deepen when she gets to Africa. And she learns a great deal about God there. One thing she learns is that every African is a theologian. All Africans believe in God. And so she thinks she's come to introduce God, but in fact, there's already a theology. And it's not entirely unlike her own.
Will you read for us?
I would love to. So just to set this up briefly, the horse is named Caesar. So you'll hear about Caesar. And keep in mind that Henry is her husband, and Jacob is one of the people in their household. And there's some other characters here who are members of their household. Emma remembered their one trip out into the hills around the town, taken in their early Obamashaw months when they still lived at the old compound. They had put Wole and Abike on Caesar. Emma had walked with Jacob and Henry. Duro knew the path to an outcrop of rock pocked with large basins that held pools of water. Midway up, Emma had felt fatigued and hot. She had urged the others to go ahead. She would sit beneath a tree and rest before catching up with them. But Henry said no. She had tried again. Go ahead with the picnic things. Wole can stay with me. No, Henry had said. The rest can go and I will stay. When at last she and Henry reached the summit and looked out across the hill, they saw the white flag of the tablecloth tied high in a limb. Below them, the land spread out green, except for Obamashaw, brown and ochre, dotted with groves of trees. Most of the pools were shallow enough for Wole to step through, all but the amethyst blue pool, which Duro said was too deep to measure. Does it ever dry up? Emma said. And Duro said, no, as God is eternal.
Elaine Neal Orr reading from her debut novel, A Different Sun, and she's going to be reading from it at Quail Ridge Books on April 9th. Lee Smith is going to be there to introduce her. We've established that Emma is not you. Emma is another character, and if anything, probably has a little more of your mother, because you were going in different directions. Emma goes from the American South to Africa. You went the other way. But the descriptions of the African landscape, is that taken from your memory, or is it taken from the diary or research?
Oh, it's taken from my memory.
Yeah.
Yes. Lorana recorded the number of people they had in Sunday school. She didn't record the landscape that much. She does record a river crossing that's a kind of significant scene, but I embellish it quite a bit because I knew the African river, the Nigerian rivers. You know, my first vocabulary was Nigerian trees, right? And guavas and mangoes and these wonderful hills around Obamashaw. This is all out of my memory.
The spiritual odyssey, again, it hinted at here, you can feel Emma's eyes opening wide as she begins to think about the eternal in a new way, the eternal in all of the natural world around her and the theologians who reflect it and reflect on it.
Yes, absolutely. She begins to see that there's a world before her that she has come into, right? And I can't say too much about the end, obviously, but there are worlds beyond her. I'll put it that way. And she has dipped into it, and it goes very deep. And she begins to understand that even her calling has come from a place that she did not understand. Perhaps she has been called by this continent. And can that also be God? Of course that can also be God. That is God, right?
Yeah, there's a wonderful – at first she's called by that passage in Isaiah in which God says, who will go? And Isaiah says, here I am, Lord, send me.
Yes.
Brave words, you know.
Yes.
And if you're a pious religious, you think, yes, send me to that continent where I will show them the light. And she gets there and realizes that the light that shines on Georgia is indeed the same light, but the reflections and shadows are so utterly different.
Absolutely. She steps off the boat in Lagos and sees, the shadows are blue. I don't remember what I described there, but something else is red. She begins to see that the colors are brighter. In fact, she's come to an intenser light. She's come to a place where there's more revelation than there was in Georgia.
You take a passage, there's at least one passage from Emma's journal, where she talks about just that, about coming to understand that this mission that she thought she had a complete grasp on when she was in Georgia is anything but. I wonder if maybe I can get you to read that for
sure.
Us.
Sure. This is about a third of the way through. And as you said, it's an excerpt out of her diary from 1854. I have learned to think thus. If an evening turns to day, a dry season comes to rain, and an injury brings pardon, surely I can turn, for the earth and the heaven have turned me in the night, and take the light of God's word, and walk out again into the day, light into light, and give myself to the thing I came for, even as, less and less, I know exactly what that is. It may be that we follow God only by losing our way.
From Emma's journal, and of course from the novel A Different Sun, Elaine Neal Orr, the author, and with me here today. Did you feel you needed to construct Emma's diary in order to write this book? Did you need to have that whole thing, or could you just tell her story?
Oh, well, you mean, did I need to construct it beyond what I had?
Right.
Yes, you know, I read through it over and over and over to be sure I hadn't missed anything.
Lorana's diary.
Right. Thank you. Oh, I'm see. Yes.
Did you
Emma's
have to write
diary.
A diary for Emma?
I did not write an entire diary for Emma. I wrote excerpts. In other words, I invented these. Right. This is an invention.
Right.
This is fiction.
I just didn't know if you needed to write that whole thing out.
The whole thing out. What an interesting idea.
That's your next novel. Interesting project for you, and I only have a few seconds left, but the idea that you were going in different directions, that for you the displacement was from Africa, albeit as a white woman, to the United States, and of course Emma and Lorana went the other way. What an interesting project for a writer.
Well, yes. I'm always trying to get myself back to Africa, and I'd like to have some company. So, right, I write these books, my memoir and now this diary, to carry some people with me. And so that means we are leaving the U.S. and we're going over there. And it was a wonderful construction and reconstruction, great fun. And I'm so happy to have it out today. It's on sale today.
Wonderful and great fun to have you on the program, Elaine. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Elaine Neal Orr is a professor of English at North Carolina State University. The new novel, A Different Sun, she's going to be giving a reading at Quail Ridge Books Tuesday, April 9th, 7:30. Lee Smith is going to be there to introduce her. She's also going to be at McIntyre's in Pittsburgh on Saturday, April 13th at 11 o'clock. The State of Things continues. Stay tuned.